Can you hear me?
Absolutely.
Perfect. We got it, Regina.
All right. Absolutely. Perfect. So why don't we transition over to starting our Awakening Together satsang. So the purpose of Awakening Together satsang, as I mentioned a little earlier, is to invite people into the room that aren't usually in the room. And so they're people we don't usually get to hear from. And they're people that I sense have something to offer, something worth hearing. As I said, I sense, because I don't know the people always. Sometimes I might, but I didn't know Mike. I just had this feeling as soon as the idea for Awakening Together satsang came, I had this feeling to invite Mike. Now, of course, I knew his name, and the reason I knew his name is two people that I know, Nikki Dobson and Lisa Taddeo, have both spoken to me saying that I would love him and that he was clear. So this is what I knew about Mike. I would love him, and he was clear. That's it. And the idea just stayed with me. You know, even though it took us a few months to get these Awakening Together satsangs going, the idea just stayed with me. And I would see his name pop up sometimes on Open Minds and Facebook, and I would always just feel this, yes, yes. So when it came time, I called him. I think I emailed him first. I emailed him, and he asked me why I wanted to invite him to be the first satsang guest. And I was very honest with him. I told him, I don't know. I don't know. I said, it's just a feeling. And he said, that's the best answer in the world. And so I knew right then that he and I were somewhat aligned, because I would have said the same thing. Then he and I got to talk on the phone a couple of weeks ago, I think it was. We only talked for about 15 minutes. I was moving from one thing to another thing and didn't have a lot of time. But I'll just say there was a lot of resonance. Nikki and Lisa were right. I love him. And he did seem to be very, very clear. What we're going to do tonight is just get to know him. We have no specific plan except that he mentioned something on the phone that I asked him to bring. Something that I think Lisa Carnes wrote for him. I think he said it was written down, or maybe she spoke it and he transcribed it later. I don't know. But this, whatever this is, it seemed to cause a shift for him. Something got triggered. Yeah. So I've asked him to bring that. But before we go to that, I think what we need to do is start by just getting to know Mike a little bit. What I'm going to do is I'm going to turn the mic over to Mike. And Mike, when you begin speaking, you know, speak as if you're speaking to an audience of people who don't know who you are and they want to get to know you a little bit. Of course, one thing they're going to be interested in is your spiritual path. And then just let the speaking naturally happen. If I have a question, I will put my hand up so you'll see that. If anyone else has a question, you may put your hand up as well. You can also type the question on the board, but sometimes things that get typed on the board also go unseen. So if it's not real important, you could type it on the board. If you really want to ask it, put your hand up. Mike, with that said, I am turning the mic over to you, and thank you very much for coming.
Thanks, Regina, for the invitation. I really appreciate it, sweetie. Like Regina said, I've seen quotes of hers from time to time, I think vice versa. I have heard beautiful things about her from Nikki, and I love Nikki to death. And if initially I kind of told her no, this doesn't resonate with me going off and talking about myself, but when... When she put it the way she did, I couldn't help but say yes. It was just from the heart. She said her heart kept telling her to, which told me get the hell out of the way and come on in. My name again is Mike Lowine. I have been married to my wife just about 30 years. The first 15 to 20 of it, miserable. My background is really interesting. It seems like a very distant lifetime to me. I was an ultra right-wing Republican, Rush Baugh, Rush Limbaugh listening, and I was also a very strict conservative Christian. I was in the only true Church of God. All the rest of you poor suckers, you would be given a chance at the second coming, but, you know, I was especially chosen. Very, very insecure individual, and I used that. I hated poor people. Money was my big thing. I chased money. I made a lot of money, and I judged anybody who didn't. Just very, 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 very insecure at best. After about 15 years of fighting with my wife, I mean, fighting in front of our three boys miserably, things just started coming to a head. The church was kind of pulled out from us. The guy that had taken over was saying, hey, maybe we're not the true church and we need to change things. Well, all my belief systems were being crushed. So that's when I went more into the money, went into the Republican side and the judgment. I would drive by a trailer park and just cut them down. I hated gay people. I hated, because I hated myself was the bottom line. And eventually things got so miserable. I told my wife for probably the next couple of years. And I started opening my mind just a little bit. Something had to be different. Whatever I was doing was working. The more I chased money, the more miserable I got. And I finally had found, it was really odd because I had ordered a commodities trading course with the idea that, well, if I make just a little bit more money, I'll be happy. And when it came in, the gentleman had put a book in with it by a guy named Vernon Howard. I had never heard of this guy. It was called The Power of Psychopictography. I really thought it was crazy, but I respected it enough. I thought, well, I'll read it. Well, when I first started reading it, I was on the treadmill at the gym. I was also very into being in shape and all that stuff. And I started reading it, and he started making the comments. He said, you know, if you really want to be happy, if you want to be at peace, you need to drop the labels of who you think you are. That sent me in a tizzy. There in the middle of the gym, I grabbed the book, threw it down on the floor. As it's leaving my hand, I realized there's a whole bunch of people in the gym looking at me because I'm talking to myself. I'm pissed. And threw the book down, sheepishly went and grabbed it, got to the locker room, got home, threw the book on the floor, and didn't pick it up for another 2 weeks. But whatever I was doing wasn't working. So I picked the book back up. Eventually, this kind of led to me opening my mind much more. I read The Power of Now, which completely resonated with me, and to such a degree that I went out and bought a number of copies of it and gave it to friends who thought I was absolutely out of my mind, and rightfully so. I became another born-again Christian right then and there, and it was the best lesson I ever had. I heard, what is this crap you're trying to tell me? This is Greek. What's going on? And realized it's time to put that away. What I ended up doing eventually was running across Wayne Dyer stuff. And Wayne Dyer was quoting the course just about every chapter. And I read three or four of his books before I really clicked that, oh, what is this Course in Miracles? So I had done some research, picked it up, ordered it finally, and ordered another book off the Hay House website that I really have no idea if it had anything to do with the course, called Disappearance of the Universe. And those things just completely grasped me. It was the first time anything made sense. When I was reading those pieces, I just devoured it. And when I was reading that stuff, it put me at peace. But as soon as I put it down, I was suffering again. And it just... I just read everything. I read everything Ken Watnick. I read everything around the course, any material I could get a hold of. In literally 4 years, I had read the course 9 times. I had gone through the lesson 4 times. I had read the teacher's manual, the prayer, everything. I mean, just devoured everything. And finally came to a point where it was, maybe it's time to put the course down. Everything was resonating with, if a thief will simply do this, be still, I think it's lesson 189. And when it just sank to me, and it was finally time, okay, I can study for 7, 8, 9 hours a day and feel at peace, but as soon as I put it down, I wasn't. And so in turn, it was time to start living. And I really don't, I have not picked up the course since that time. That was 5 years ago. That was the best decision I had ever made. There's nothing wrong with the studying the course and the reading and all that, but eventually you have to get to the point where you live it, where you start putting it down. Yes, David, time to start living the course. And that was a gorgeous realization for me. I found I was more and more at peace as time went on. Was reading a lot of Adi Ashanti, was reading just about everything I could get my hands on, and finally started putting that stuff aside. Byron Katie was one of the last things I think I had read, and it was just such a simplified way of seeing through the suffering for me. It was exactly what the course was doing in 669 pages in a very succinct 4-question turnaround. And it just hit me very clearly that that's where my suffering was coming from. Eventually, I had run across Elisa Cairns' video. If any of you have not seen her, she's a young, I think she's 33 at this point. Very young soul. She's English. She was in Australia at the time. And she had just had a shift herself about 6 months before. And I had seen her video. And it says, it was the most beautiful thing I had ever seen. The 15-minute Just Feel video was what I first had seen. I connected with another soul, Julie Rumbarger, over that. I actually posted on Open Minds, and I heard crickets. Nobody got it. Julie did, and her and I kind of connected over it. And finally, I got a hold of Lisa and asked her if I could ask her some questions, if we could Skype, and she was just a beautiful soul, opened herself up to me, and gave me the opportunity to Skype with her. And I had a lot of questions, one being, that do I have any choice, even that choice between love and fear? Because, of course, the Course says so. And that is a big one for a lot of people. The script is written. It ended up becoming my experience to watch myself being done. What Lisa had done over this time was kind of open my soul. I was sitting at our house, and one of my best friends since I was 12 years old was over visiting in Kalispell, Montana. And I ended up, he was just fascinated with Kathy. He is not on this or was not on this path. He was enamored by my wife, and I was like I was in the room for a very, very uncomfortable situation for me. Well, after it all kind of came undone, I had kind of this thing of, well, you know what? I talk about no ownership. It's time to live it. And so I had talked to Kathy. She was fine with it. She had an attracted him. She liked the attention he was getting, because at that point, I was seeing very clearly what the special relationship was and wasn't able to give her a lot of that, false attention, say, trying to, you know, build somebody up, but it wasn't doing much for her. And in turn, he was, and it was something she really enjoyed. So I, had decided to write a letter to my friend and give him be okay, that it was okay. If you and Kathy want to be together, I'm 100% okay. If she does or doesn't, it doesn't any bearing. I need to give her freedom. And it was a beautiful, absolutely beautiful thing. I had the most gorgeous experience with it. It was such a freeing experience to be able to allow complete love and freedom for my wife to do whatever she needed to with my friend. And, of course, my friend didn't think it was so fun. He it scared the hell out of me. Like, what's my agenda? What do I want? Yeah, right, you're giving your wife to me. So, anyway, in the end, I was experiencing so much freedom over it. I had sent the letter to Lisa, inboxing her, and talking to her about it, saying what a beautiful experience it was. And she basically told me, that is gorgeous, that is love, you're starting to see that you can't own another. That's beautiful, but, and here was the huge but, that's not it. Don't attach to that realization. And I was so pissed at her, I couldn't believe it. And she told me, she goes, I asked her probably 2 days before that, was there anything she could see in our Skyping sessions that she that felt that was holding me back, that there was still suffering there? And could she see anything that was holding me back? And after crushing me, I call her the slayer of all hope. After crushing me, she ended up sending me this, and this is what I had saved. It was actually sent in an email, and it was, here's what came to me about you, Mike. She let it sit for 2 days, and here's what it was. It says, the whole mind falls to bits. There is nothing to hold on to. That's not to say that all the teachings that you had in the past weren't perfect. They couldn't have been any other way. That was how Mike's story had to go. But now the whole constructs of mind fall apart. Nothing makes sense because it is now beginning to be seen as just is, rather than somebody doing something, whether that be God or another human. Life is just happening without anybody doing anything. And this baffles the mind. Cause and effect are just apparent. Really, there has only ever been and only ever will be this. And all the teachings become a bit senseless, but still the heart sings at them. Nothing is left to hold on to. Complete free fall in love. Free fall in love. Although, even that is just a thought and can't be held on to. Just this, which contains all of this. I had read it the night she'd sent it, and it was beautiful, beautiful words. That was about it. And I had gone to bed. And the next morning I woke up and read it again, and things changed. Just something happened. I had the shift of seeing exactly that, of experiencing that I was watching my hand raise. I was watching my foot. I was being done. The thoughts weren't mine. I could see so clearly that they had nothing to do with truth. They had nothing to do with me. And that was the most gorgeous realization, but also just another strength. My wife laughed because I walked around Ken Wapnick would say, like a blissnik, for probably about 3 or 4 days. I would walk around and I would water the flowers in our garden, and it was hilarious. I was one with them. What I saw in them was me. It was just gorgeous. In fact, I would even try and take pictures of it and show Kathy later, because she would dominate. Take pictures and show her, look, isn't this beautiful? Look at this picture. So anyway, it became kind of a norm, and it also came very clear to me that that was just an experience. As beautiful as that is, it's just another experience. It had nothing to do with me, nothing to do with anything the story of Mike had done, nothing whatsoever. And yet, at the same time, I found there was still suffering. There was still a little bit of suffering. It was what I call Velcro thoughts, late at night. And it was funny because what became really clear to me was I have had Julie Rumbarger, who I've been communicating with at that time. We were talking, and she made some comment to me that said, you have intimacy issues. I feel you have intimacy issues. For some reason, I bit, and I went into that. And so all of a sudden, I went from this beautiful state into pure suffering. I mean, literally, it's like it all been just stripped from me. And I was all of a sudden in this most dire suffering. Oh my God, look at me. I'm a fake. I'm a fraud. I have intimacy issues. All this stuff for about 24 hours. And it was probably the most miserable 24 hours I had ever experienced. And it was funny because at that time, all of a sudden the realization came to me, whoa, stop. The only reason you are suffering is because you think you shouldn't be doing it. You should be a different way than what is. It's always that resistance. Always that resistance. And that is what just, it just all of a sudden snapped me back. It brought the suffering out of the picture. And it's like, wow, it is simply because I'm resisting whatever is sitting here in front of me. I am believing a thought that says something should or shouldn't be, and judging an expectation is the only reason I ever suffer, period. And not to say that those Velcro thoughts don't come. I had two sons over this past summer attempt to kill themselves. And one had slit his wrist. The other one, for 3 weeks, had mentioned he was going to. We lost all contact with him for 3 weeks. As far as we knew, he was dead. And it was fascinating to see the thoughts, because when my oldest had done that, and I had, I woke up in the middle of the night and the thoughts were shooting, and I was there for probably half an hour, was drained in these suffering thoughts and crying, and my son killed himself, and then all of a sudden it became clear to me. I stopped and looked at those thoughts, and every single one of those thoughts, every single one of them that I was suffering over were should. I should have done this. I shouldn't have done that. And what came after that was a huge smile, the most beautiful, the realization that if he did kill himself, his suffering is done. I'm the only one suffering. And if he didn't, he has a beautiful gift, of which we found out 2.5 weeks later that he did. And just some gorgeous things. I talked to a gentleman. In fact, it happened to be Lisa Cairns. It was her boyfriend at the time who they had split up since then. His name is Roger. And Roger had watched one of my videos I'd done on YouTube shortly after I had that experience. And he got a hold of me and says, I see you understand that this is all just being done. And I said, yeah. He says, you're not suffering anymore. I said, well, I said, I still have vocal thoughts. And he said, he put it pretty succinctly. He says, so tell me, how long are they lasting? And I said, they always came in the middle of the night. I never could even attach to a thought during the day, but in the middle of the night, that's when it seemed to be they would grab it. Wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and financial issues or whatever it be. We're always, you know, I'd snag onto them. And he asked me, he says, well, how long do you hold on to these thoughts? I said, well, it's usually about 15 to 20 seconds before I see it. It's simply a thought. It's a should or should thought. And then it lets me go once I see it. And it was rather fascinating because he started laughing. I thought, really? And he said, that's a problem? And I had to laugh at myself. We take what has really been my experience with all this. It really is so simple, but until it seems so friggin' hard because I was one of the most miserable SOBs you would have ever met. I don't have an awful lot more to add. I'm going to take off the voice. And Regina, you and Dale, I'll answer any questions the best I can. That's about all I have to say right now.
Thank you very much, Mike. That was a wonderful, wonderful beginning. So now people have a sense, which is wonderful. And, you know, one thing that I was chuckling at myself as you were ending the story there, when you were talking about how at night these thoughts come and you said you were suffering with them and you even told Roger you were suffering with them. And then he asked you the specifics, how long do you hold on to them? And you mentioned it was a very brief time and he said, and that's a problem. And, you know, it was just another should you had on yourself. You know, you shouldn't have these thoughts. So, so it was kind of funny. I did notice while you were speaking, there was someone who had their hand up, but I think he's actually left the room now. So I guess that question is no longer there. So, what I would like to do now is I would like to open up for questions. I think that it's really valuable sometimes to talk to someone and let them speak about their experience, especially if there seems to be something that we perceive ourselves as struggling with. For example, Mike just demonstrated that he perceived himself as struggling with these thoughts in the middle of the night. He spoke to someone else about it, and they were able to show him really the silliness of the idea that he was struggling so that he even laughed about it. You know, if you have questions about anything at all that you think Mike might have an answer for, but some of the questions, I know sometimes people feel, he's using the term Velcro thoughts, and sometimes people feel these thoughts are really, really stuck. They can't see that they're just thoughts. If you have any questions about his experience, maybe, or maybe Mike, maybe as I'm speaking, you're even realizing there's something you can share. Did you have any kind of a process that seemed to happen for you where you began to see that thoughts were just thoughts? Do you recall that at all? Any specific experiences that you can remember that really were kind of, inner teaching experiences that created shifts so that the thoughts became less and less Velcro-ish? I'm going to release the mic and see if you want to pick it up. Also, if anybody else has a question, again, you can type it on the board or you can raise your hand. What we really want to do is take advantage of these opportunities when we have somebody else here in the room that might express things a little differently. We really want to take advantage of this to ask our questions and just hear what someone else's experience is, because maybe it will be helpful. Mike, do you have any memory then of how you came to see that thoughts are just thoughts? Because I don't think that's where we all start off. Any remembrance at all of how they became less and less Velcro for you so that you got to the point where it was just 15, 20 seconds instead of struggling with something with for days, weeks, or even months? I'm releasing the mic.
Regina, I would, you know what, one of the best companions that I will send anybody to was Byron Katie. It really was about questioning those thoughts. Are they true? How do I feel when I believe that thought, and how would I feel if I didn't believe that thought? And the turnarounds, because this is always all our own mirror. Like I say, whatever anybody ever says to me, is always about them. I've heard people say that, you know, everything out here is your mirror. That really has not been my experience. What I have found, that if I react, if I'm upset by what somebody does, then all of a sudden it's time to look under my own hood and question the thoughts that I'm having around them. And yeah, to just say they're not your thoughts, ignore them, is insanity at best, because we think we are these thoughts. And that is where all the suffering comes in, every last ounce of it. So all you can do is question. And I tend to be very, very pragmatic whenever I try and talk to somebody, because it's very, very factual. How in the world can you be your thoughts if you're aware of it, if you can sit back and become aware? Very, very simple, but it seems like it's the more you see through them. If a thought is not believed, is not attached to, is not owned, it has no power whatsoever. It's like a dust particle floating through your head. You know, you just watch it and smile. The insane thoughts still come, much, much less than they ever did before. But they still come. But they're not attached to. They're smiled at. It's like some of the most insane thoughts still come through here, but there's a huge smile on my face. It's just got to laugh at me. It's hilarious. And that realization that they are not even my thoughts. I mean, we are trained from day one to grab onto ownership, the ego, everything we can around this. And so when you hear something, that says, you're not doing it, these aren't even your thoughts, it's scary as hell. Like somebody post-dirty, you know, the truth will set you free, but first it will piss you off. And that was exactly my experience, because every idea that you think you are, every identification, it's all crap. It's all bull. It's like, I'll read this off. This is what I consider the course in its essence. Simply do this. Be still. Lay aside all thoughts of what you are and what God is. All concepts you have learned about the world. All images you hold about yourself. Empty your mind of everything it thinks is either true or false, good or bad, of everything it judges worthy. All ideas which is a shame. Hold on to nothing. Do not bring with you one thought. The path was taught. Nor one belief you have ever learned before from anything. Forget this world, forget this course, and come with holy empty hands unto your God. And I will release the mic to Dr. Nutella.
James, I do not know what you're talking about. What is that? I'm not even going to say what that is, okay? Because I don't know if you're trying to cast a spell on me, but look. You were talking about dreams.
Thank you. And yeah, Dr. Nutella, what has happened is you have been red dotted. And the reason for that is simply because this is a room that likes to stay on purpose. And we're here tonight to listen to Mike and to learn from his experience of, if you'll pardon the word, awakening. Everyone seems to have a different experience of awakening from, in his case, from suffering, for the way he is describing it. And so we're listening to his experience. And if you have a question very specific to that, you can take the mic and ask. But otherwise, we just ask everyone to listen. And it looks like he may have already left the room anyway, so I didn't even get to finish that. So Mike, I do have another question for you then, unless somebody else has a question. Let's see what David has written here. David says, step 5 in my 12-step recovery is to admit to God, myself, and another human being the exact nature of my wrongs. Right now, I find myself willing to fight, abuse, or manipulate any other human being to avoid my shame. I noticed that I am terrified because I don't trust what is here and now. I don't trust the present. An example of how I don't trust now is I manipulate what is going on to make now look different than it is. I'm scared of the moment. Can you possibly share on learning to trust now? So, Mike, is there anything that comes up with for you in regard to what David has written on the board? The mic is yours. And Mike, I don't know if something's happened so that you're unable to take the mic. what I'm going to do is release the mic again and see if you can take it. Yeah, for some reason you can't hear anything. Ah, okay, then let's try this. Leave the room and come back. That will probably fix it. Can everyone else hear me? By the way, make sure it's not me. Okay, good. All right, then we'll let Mike come back, hopefully. I don't see his self leaving the room. Okay, Jay, you want to take the mic? There he goes. Good.
Okay, is that better? Can you hear me now? Yes. Well, I had a question for Mike. I don't know if he's still in the room or not. Or listening. Yeah, he is here. You know, he mentioned he was a money guy listening to Rush Limbaugh for all those years prior to his awakening. I was just interested to hear his thoughts and his reflections on time, because it seems like when we start to awaken, you know, we could spend 20 years being a physical thinking person, but in like 3 years, we like make all these radical changes, and changes in our thinking, changes in our consciousness. Does Mike see in his experience, and he also described the difficult relationship with his wife. A lot of arguing in front of his kids. Like, my parents argued in front of us all the time, too, so I can really relate to that that experience a lot. And it was something I was kind of ashamed of for years growing up. I couldn't invite friends over. It was just you know, weird, I guess you could say. But just what are your thoughts, Mike, on, like, the speed up? Your experience, like, before all of this, and then sort of the speed up and your sort of your trigger to awaken, and then sort of the time, how you've experienced life from a sense of like that compression of time and the celestial speed up, you could say, in your own experience. I'd like to hear about your thoughts about that, as to how you've experienced that. So on taking my question off the air.
Thank you for the question. I don't know why, but that word awakening, enlightenment, all that, it's not something that resonates with me. It has been seen so clear that there is really no such thing. We chase for something that is a complete illusion. It does seem that the story of my, the suffering is no longer here, but I also know I'm not in charge. This can change tomorrow. Who knows? I can't imagine it. I can't imagine biting on the thoughts again. But at the same time, I'm not in charge. I'm not running the show, and who knows where it's going. But I do see that the only problem I ever have is I'm resisting what is sitting right here in front of me. As far as time, wow. It was a speed up process. I can go back, and again, I'll talk on the relative level, which is thoughts and what apparently looked like what, you know, caused a shift in me to not be suffering. And yet at the same time, I also realized that was just the process. That was unfolding exactly the way it was. So you kind of hear me contradict myself simply because I go back and forth in that. But the whole time thing, I laugh because the Course talks about you can save many, many, many lifetimes. And I smile at that because the Course tries to reach you on so many different levels. And that is complete bull. In all reality, there is no such thing as time. Period. And again, I'll go to the pragmatic part of it. For me to be sitting here, having a past thought, okay, I'm going to go into my past. I can grab that thought of what I was fighting with my wife and all the things we're going into. I grab that thought, paste the label of past on it. It's only ever happening right now. It's only ever happening right now. Even the future, nobody's ever touched the past. Nobody can ever touch the past. Nobody's ever going to touch the future. I laugh at this illusionary future because all the future is me stepping back into the past, apparent past, grabbing what I did or didn't like and projecting it on some imagined future that's never going to happen because it always all happens now. So there is no, I mean, I guess apparently in the dream it looks like it saves time. But even the happy dream is just a dream. Every last bit of it is nothing but a dream. It has nothing to do with me. There is no you. There is no me. That's what is clear. And to attach anything to what I did is kind of hard for me to go. I can go back and say, well, it looks like this happened. Because I can go back and say, I look at the Course. For some reason, when I was reading the Course, like I went over and over and over and started mixing in I am that. Adi Ashanti and Kim Wapnick and everything else and be still. Or when Jay would say something very succinctly that, you know, you're already home. That's the stuff that just really stuck with me. That is the stuff that really, can you hear me now? Okay. That is the stuff that really resonated deeply in my soul. It for some reason it's like, okay, what's going on? And it finally, and again, I you see this after the fact, but it was simply that we doubt. That we have the slightest sample of doubt that we are already perfect and whole. And that's why those pieces, because I was doubting it. And I went on an intellectual trust of those verses until it became my reality, until it became my own experience. And that seemed to speed it up. Like I say, don't get me wrong, when I had that experience, that shift, the Velcro thoughts were still grabbing for probably another year or two. And even now, I have to chuckle because we had my two sons with the attempted suicide. Then we had, just about a week and a half ago, I lost my buddy, 14 and a half year old Boston Terrier that had been my sidekick for all that time. Hiked with him. I mean, all the stories are there. I love this little guy. And we let him go. He died in my wife's arms. I took him out to a potty in the morning, brought him back in. He wouldn't lay down. Had to pick him up and collapse. the cart to stop, which was beautiful the way it happened. I remember laying there with my hand on the cart and listening for any breath, feeling for any heartbeat was wrong. And it was funny, the next day, I'm here with my wife and this beautiful soul, Cindy, that we're all sharing here. And there was a sadness. Cindy had gotten to know him for the 3 months before and just became very close with him. And there was a sadness. And it was interesting because there was a sadness and yet a gratitude. And yet, as I started watching the thoughts that would bring up the tears, would bring up the sadness, every single one of them was completely selfish. It was, I don't get a hike with him in the morning. He's not going to lick me in the neck like he does for 5 minutes straight every morning. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with the sadness. Nothing wrong with the thoughts. But they were thoughts that I was attaching to. And every one of them had to do with a selfishness coming from me. Once I saw that, the sadness left, and it hasn't returned. It seems to be about looking at those things. You know, I'm sure not for everybody. But that's what it was for me. It's a matter of stopping and seeing those thoughts. And when those thoughts, even, this really bothers a lot of people, but no thoughts are true in my experience. Every one of them, they are thoughts. There are loving thoughts, and they're gorgeous. There are kind thoughts, and they're beautiful, and I embrace them. But I see they're also not true. If the only ones that cause the problem are the stressful ones, the shoulds and the shouldn'ts, the guilt. The doubt, those are the only ones that cause the problems. And when you can sit and become aware of those thoughts, it's just beautiful. We want to try and suppress our thoughts. We want to replace negative thoughts with positive thoughts. That is not my experience. Negative thoughts follow positive thoughts. Positive thoughts follow negative thoughts. That's duality. The only thing you looks like you can apparently do is see through the thoughts, see that they aren't true. And when you've experienced that enough times, those thoughts leave you alone. They dissipate. They still come much, much slower, it seems, but they still come. I hope that answered your question. I'll release the mic if there's any other questions.
Okay, yeah, Mike, we had a question before that I think you missed. So, Jay, if you don't mind, I'm going to go to David's question, then we'll come back to you. I think you missed it because you couldn't hear anything, so I'm going to share again what David asked. David said he's in step 5 in a 12-step recovery, and step 5 is to admit to God, himself, and other human beings the exact nature of his wrongs. He says, right now I find myself willing to fight, abuse, or manipulate any other human being to avoid my shame. I noticed that I am terrified because I don't trust what is here and now. I don't trust the present. An example of how I don't trust now is I manipulate what is going on to make now look different than it is. I'm scared of the moment. Can you possibly share on learning to trust now? So I will give the mic back to you so that you can answer whatever comes.
Wow, David. that takes me back. I trusted nobody. I trusted not myself. I agree. It's the only thing I can point you to is the reality of it all. And the reality is you're not doing it. This is being done. Nobody can apparently wake up before the allotted time. It looks like you do these things. It looks like I did this, and that changed it. And it is funny because I do share those things, and I find myself, even though I know clearly, I find myself sharing those things, and some things seem to help some people, and other people think it's insane. Like I say, you know, you take what you want, you take the rest of the curve. It's beautiful. We all seem to have to find our own way of what resonates with us. But that guilt, that is the biggest thing, and that was the only thing I could do is seeing the guilt thoughts. There is never anything wrong in any situation, never anything wrong in anything that is unfolding, only my thoughts about it. I understand what the steps are. I do get it. I've not been through them. I do get what they're trying to do. But I also find it's kind of like forgiveness in the course. If forgiveness is not about forgiving anybody else, it's not even about forgiving yourself. It's seeing the insanity of forgiveness, seeing past what you think you see. And right now, your thoughts are very, very true to you. They're very, they become so real, and the guilt and all that stuff. And to simply, the only thing I can recommend to you is tie in what you're doing with Byron Katie, questioning the thoughts. Loving What Is a gorgeous book. She has a ton of videos. I just find that if you're ready, it will change your life, because it's only ever the thought around what is going on with this baby. Your doubting are already perfect and whole. And David, come look at yourself in my eyes. You are beautiful. The rest of it is an illusion. And I know that's easier said than done, but when you can question those thoughts, you can take a little bit of time and see that not a one of them has any reality. The manipulation you find yourself doing, quit judging that. Everything comes, every suffering thought comes from a should or shouldn't, a judgment, an expectation. You think you should be doing something different. It's all bull. It's all bull. You know, you can't do it any other way. You can't do it wrong. Now, having said that, you also can't do it right. You're not doing it. It's unfolding in the most beautiful way. The only thing I can tell you is try to see the thoughts, get the hell out of your own way, and see what is right here in front of you. It's perfection. This is absolutely perfection. I'll hand the mic back.
Thank you very much, Mike. And I have you happen to mention Byron Katie, who I think, based on my experience with David, is one of his favorite teachers. So, and he does a lot of inquiry. And what he wrote today, I would say, is what's on his mind today. I've never seen David write anything like that before, and I wouldn't be surprised if 2 or 3 days from now, this not trusting now thing is a thought that is forgotten. But more to come. We'll watch David. Linda has a question. Linda says she would like to know, Mike, if you have any connection or communication with your dog, now that your dog is no longer in form, has passed on, has died, whatever words you put to that. Also, with that question, Mike, if you can comment on, do you have any thoughts about death or eternal life or any of those ideas at all, sharing what those thoughts are as well. So any communication, connection with your dog, and what are your thoughts about death?
It's been cutting in and out a little bit. I think I heard what you asked. My computer's kind of freezing up a little bit back and forth here. What I have had is dreams, which have been, you know, very interesting at Bubba, and it was fascinating. My experience, a lot of people I understand have these experiences, these these connections with other people, the ethereal, the seeing the dead. That has not been my experience, and to be real blunt, I'm grateful as all get out, because my ego was so huge that if I had been given any gifts, I would have run screaming and said, look at me, look at how special I am. I love what the course put it, like on reincarnation or any of those things. It just really sang to me. It's like, you know, they're distractions. I used to hold course meetings with people, and people want to get off on past lives and this and that. And to me, and I'm just speaking about myself, it was just a distraction, something to take me away from going home, or whatever you might want to call it. I just found it to be gorgeous. Like I say, when the sadness left, I have nothing. All that was left with my dog, or with my sons, or anything that's going on, was just pure gratitude. I mean, how incredibly fortunate was I to have this amazing opportunity to spend 14 years with this purely unconditional loving soul. I can't even put words to it. It was just, once this happened for us, it was just that absolute gorgeousness of my God. And as far as death, you know, like I say, it's seen for what it is. It's a complete illusion. You know, again, death means nothing when there's no longer the attachment to the body, or to the thoughts. I mean, you know, they're beautiful, they're fun. I guess we'll see when somebody or the two girls on with here decide to stab me sometime. I may have a completely different take on it. But right now, it's just being beautiful. It's releasing this meat suit. In fact, that was something that I found kind of interesting that I had with Lisa. You know, she talked about this to me, and it was really true. She says, you know, most people tend to go through a process of sitting back. It's first you're on the stage. You think you are the play. And then you sit back, and that was kind of what happened when I sat there and I watched myself going around. You sit back and watch yourself being done. All of a sudden, you're watching yourself as a character in the play with really no attachment to it. And it's a very, very comfortable place, a very, very attractive place. But Lisa, bless her soul, she told me, don't stop there. That's not it. As if there was any choice, but it was a beautiful pointer because, like you said, you put this meat suit back on and join back in life again. And, you know, for probably a good year and a half or so, I really just kind of wanted to sit back and just watch it. There's nothing really meant anything. It was all perfect. Didn't matter what happened. But now it seems I'm finding myself jumping back into it with this most gorgeous, playful laughter. Absolute gorgeous, playful laughter. I don't know if that answers your question. It sounds like I just went off in left field, but that's okay too. So I'll hand the mic back.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what it sounds like to me, and I'm sure there's probably at least a couple other people here who are noticing, but a lot of what you're saying, Mike, is exactly what I spent the last hour saying, so it's it's kind of fun to listen. I think maybe one thing I would like to ask you, you know, we all have our own experiences, as you mentioned. We all have to find our own way. And my experience has been that I really saw through a lot of thoughts. I saw through some very strong, what I call core thoughts. Like the first thought that I saw through was betrayal. I saw clearly there was no such thing as betrayal. Then I think I saw through rejection. I don't remember how all it went, but I saw through all of these thoughts. And of course, once I saw through them as clearly as I did, they were no longer, as you say, Velcro thoughts. They no longer stuck. I also spent a lot of time learning to listen to, I used to call it guidance. And then at some point I began to just call it my heart, my intuition, but learning to tune into myself, for lack of better words, myself, and be in harmony with myself, to be aligned with myself. And that did involve things that you're talking about, like not believing a thought. You know, a thought shows up and says, ah, geez, you're stupid. And, you know, the heart says, you know, without words, the heart says, yeah, that doesn't mean anything. And I agree with the heart. Yep, that doesn't mean anything. And I let it go. And you know, like you, I kind of, you know, I went through this process of, you know, I'm going to call it purification. And, you know, so I was in the world in one way, and then I went through this process of purification, and now I kind of feel like I'm back in the world, but in a different way. I'm in the world really enjoying it, really loving it, but really paying attention to it. So here's my question. After all of that, the one thing I heard you talk about that I don't talk about because I don't have what feels like that specific experience to me is you talked about a moment after the day after you read what Lisa wrote to you in an email, you talked about a distinct shift. And I've never felt any distinct shift. I've felt more of a gradual transformation, for lack of better words. So I don't know if that brings up anything for you to share about, anything to share about that distinct shift, anything to share about whether shifts are necessary or there's, you know, different ways that this happens to us. Just anything at all that brought up for you to share, Mike, I'd like to hear. The mic is yours.
Wow, beautiful sharing, Regina. You know what? Before I finish, I just want to say how grateful I am that because of Lisa and because of Nikki that we got to connect. I had a beautiful conversation with you early on when we talked about doing this, and I'm just very grateful that we did connect. And thank you for asking me. It means the world. You know, I laugh at it because the shift, as it was recognized, it was more of just becoming the watcher, just sitting back and seeing, oh my God, I knew it intellectually, but I watched myself being done. It was like taking a first step. Like I say, Kathy made fun of me for about 3 days. She thought I was such a goofball, which I think is funny, but it was just kind of, like I say, what Kim Watman called the blissness. And I have talked to others who it's all been a gradual thing. None of that means anything. It's just an experience. It means absolutely nothing. The only thing that came to me was that was the realization. This is what we are. That is normal. All the rest that I was forcing, like I say, when I got stuck in that suffering for 24 hours when Julie said I had intimacy issues, all of a sudden I went from this effortless flow of what we really are back into this constriction. And my God, when you haven't been there for a bit and then you go into that constriction, it's like hell on earth. And that shit really means nothing. The experience means nothing. The only thing that meant anything to me is, am I still suffering? And, you know, and as with the Velcro thoughts, those were still some suffering, but they were minute compared. And I can feel it, you know, I can feel it when I get into it, like I did for a half an hour with my son, when I woke up in the middle of the night and started going into that. I was right back into suffering again. And it just takes so much energy, because what we are is this beautiful, effortless, light, love, and laughter. Everything else it means nothing. I mean, it means nothing. And so for me, that shift was beautiful, but I've talked to others that didn't have it and they're not suffering. And that really is all that matters. There's no awakening, there's no enlightenment. We all are what we chase after. And it seems it's the chasing, the striving, the trying to get it that keeps us from seeing it. It's kind of an oxymoron. You know, when you finally realize or get tired enough of doing this chasing for it, that's when it seems to all of a sudden come. It's like when you don't really want it anymore, you're done with it, all of a sudden it comes. And I just got to laugh at it. It's like we've been set up for the most screwed up situation here, which I love, but wow, dude, we're playing quite a hell of a game here. Anyway, I'll hand this back over to you, if I can.
Of course, as I listen to you speaking, Mike, I'm getting a clearer and clearer realization as to why your Facebook page and why your Pal Talk nickname is You Can't Do It Wrong. because that does seem to be a message that you are sending as you speak. You seem to be sending that without saying it over and over again, those exact words. You're sending that message, you can't do it wrong. Something else that you're kind of saying without saying is, don't worry, be happy. You know, that seems to be ringing in your words. And of course, the way you emphasize the shoulds, you know, that really the shoulds were the cause of your suffering. I'm sure the shoulds are the cause of a lot of other people's suffering. You know, I asked the question about the shift, but the truth is, it just came up as a question now. I let go of the question for myself a long time ago. I used to have this should in my mind. I should have this shift, you know, like Lisa Carnes had. And, you know, this hasn't happened for me. And yet at the same time, as soon as I let go of the thought that I should, it was gone. It was gone. It just didn't exist anymore. Even the thought, I don't think about shifts. And I am happy. So it's kind of interesting how much we each look at ourself, we each look at our process, and we compare it to others, and we think there's a problem, when the only problem is thinking there's a problem. And that's what I hear from you, Mike. That's the Regina Don Akers summary. If I'm doing that wrong, let me know. That's what I think that you are saying in the way that you're sharing. Jay, I notice your hand is up. Please take the mic.
Okay, can you guys hear me? Yeah, I just wanted to say I really appreciate your talk, Mike. I love how just no-nonsense you are in your description of, I don't even want to call it spirituality, because you mentioned, you know, spirituality isn't something you want. Like, you don't want enlightenment and all that garbage. And I think you call it crap. And, you know, you talked about having this big ego, you know, and that if you would have received any gifts, you'd just be like, wow, look at me, I'm special. So it's like you got kind of hip to the entire ego thing, and then when you really, you know, however, you know, it happened. Like you said, we don't. It's already preordained when all this is going to occur anyway. So when this change in awareness occurred with you, it's almost like you retained your understanding of the ego aspect of it and you applied it to the spiritual and like didn't fall into any of these traps of like ego spirituality, or like Chogyam Trungpa wrote a book called Cutting Through Spiritual Materialism, where it talks about the spiritual ego a lot. And it's just interesting how I just love how you cut through it just so simply in your descriptions. I appreciate that a lot. And so it's just a thought of appreciation. And if you had any further comments about that subject in general, please feel free. I'd love to hear more of your thoughts.
I really do. I do see it as crap. No ditch or anything, but I laugh at that because I saw it in myself. I see it in a lot of, that happens to be the story of many, many people, is the spiritual ego. Wow. We want to grab it. I love it because I will have people come on from my posts on Facebook, or You Can't Go Wrong or whatever, and just love what I post. Oh, it's so beautiful. And then they'll see my sense of humor. I've been blocked more times than you would probably care to admit. we have these ideas of these concepts. You should have this sense of humor. You should eat this way. You should drink. You should do this. You should do that. And it's all bullshit. It's all bullshit. None of it makes any sense in the end. It really doesn't. It seems like there is this little idea, like Regina was saying, how it kind of looks like you do this, you do that, you do that. But in the end, it doesn't matter. None of it matters. You know, we're all already there. All we have to do is get the hell out of our own way and see it. You know, and easier said than done sometimes, but you just gotta laugh at yourself and everything else. We are just a funny bunch. We really are. Anyway, it looks like time wise, I'm out, and I would be more than happy answering questions, but it looks like there's probably somebody else coming on. And my beloved Seahawks may go to the Super Bowl. And I love Regina so much, I was willing to take up an hour away from my game. I'll give up the mic here.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mike, for coming. I did see a message that we could take as long as we wanted, but I knew you had a game to go see, and Danielle fixed my dinner. I have dinner to go eat, so it is time for us to move on. But, Mike, we really enjoyed you, and maybe sometime we'll get to have you back to chat again, and maybe I'll get the opportunity to get to know you some way. So it's been wonderful. That's all I can say. It's been wonderful, Mike. Thank you very much. Go watch the game and have fun. Oh, there's Nikki. Everybody wave hi to Nikki. All right, I am releasing the mic and turning it over to, I believe it's probably Lynn and David next, maybe? Letting go of the mic.